thank them for sponsoring our debate. Here in Kirkland. And it's a real honor and privilege to be here. My name is Gary Gillespie. I'm the chair of the communication department at Northwest and have been a debate coach for a while. We just returned from the World Championships in Canada at UBC, where more than 800 students from five continents came to debate the issues. And we're pleased that one of our debaters here tonight actually got into the octafinals and ranked in the top 32 best debaters in the world. Tonight we're doing a show debate to let you know what this is all about. 2,600 years ago, a group of people living on a peninsula jutting out in the Mediterranean Ocean came up with a great idea. Instead of being ruled by kings and dictators, the ancient Greeks invented democracy and conceived of the idea of rule by consent of the governed. That required that the citizens of Greece had to be trained in the art of debate. When Plato founded the Academy, the first university of the Western world, he made sure that debate was an essential part of the curriculum. And college students have been debating ever since. The Romans admired the Greeks for their democracy and applied that for a while and spread some of these ideas throughout their empire, which reached all the way up to the British Isles. Americans get our idea of debate and our tradition of civic discourse from the British. So it's only natural that we invite them down here to spar with these ideas tonight. The issue that we're considering is, would the U.S. be better off if it looked more like the U.K.? So we're here to compare and contrast the strengths and weaknesses of the two countries and see if we can come up with a reasoned conclusion. Before I introduce the debaters, let me tell you a little bit about the format of the debate. Each side will be given a chance to present their case, to try to persuade us that their side is right. Each student will come up and give a speech. After the first minute, you'll hear a clap, and that means that the other team can stand and ask questions. Now, the person who's speaking has the right to accept the question or not accept it. After each side is given their preliminary four speeches, then each team will give a rebuttal. Then at the end, we can take audience questions or comments about the topic, what you think, and we'll vote by applause. Let me say that debate is an academic game. It's a speaking game. And so the students have been assigned their topics. We're pretending that we're in an imaginary House of Parliament and that we're members of Parliament. But the whole thing is to train students for future civic discourse. So right now we're going to transform this room into an imaginary House of Parliament. You're members of Parliament, and you get to evaluate and judge and decide how you think it went. We're going to vote on who you think did the better job of debating, not maybe what you personally believe. It's been said that British and Americans are two people divided by the same language. And so tonight we want to ask the question, would the U.S. be better off if it looked more like the U.K.? Let's decide, and let's start the debate now. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I got to introduce you first. let me introduce our Speaker of the House, which presides over an imaginary parliament. Shana Cochran is from Shoreline. She's a communication and political science major, and recently was a judge at the World Championships and was rated very highly up there in Canada. Representing Northwest University is our debate team captain, Jed Nelson. Jed is from Kamiyai, Idaho, and is a religion and philosophy major. He's debated all 4 years, and in that time, he has challenged teams in Prague, Czech Republic, Madrid, Spain, Honolulu, Hawaii, Canada, and across the country. He has won a finalist award at Oregon State University and first place at the Tournament of the Great West at Seattle University. Jed is our team captain. His partner and the leader tonight is Courtney Tama. Courtney is from Ephrata, Washington. She is an English major and has won numerous awards in the last 4 years also, including second place at the Lower Columbia tournament for 2 years in a row. Courtney is also editor of the school newspaper. Our Oxford guests include Andrew Goodman. Andrew is studying politics, economics, and philosophy. He's the debate chair of the Oxford Union and has won numerous awards, including being ranked as the 15th best speaker at the World Schools Championships in Calgary, Canada in 2005. He's from London, England. His partner is Alex Just. Alex is from Edinburgh, Scotland. He's studying politics and history. And Alex is the president of the Oxford Union, which is sort of like the student body president. He's also won a long list of awards, including reaching the final rounds at the World Championships twice. And last night he got that octafinal award. So congratulations. Now we can debate the issue of whether or not the U.S. would be better off if it looked more like the U.K. So now, let the debates begin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I call this House to order to debate the resolution that this House believes that the U.S. would be better off if it looked more like the U.K. I now call on Prime Minister Alex Just to present his speech.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, ladies and gentlemen, people of the great state of Washington. Andrew and I are delighted to be in Kirkland tonight. It's a great honour for us to be speaking here. In opening up the debate, what it's very important to do is to establish what the motion means, so the issues that we're discussing. And we think that, you know, the issue of whether or not America would look better than the UK is just empirically true if we take it at a very superficial aesthetic level, because the UK is an old country. We think we have nice buildings like the Houses of Parliament. It's quite hard to imagine this room being like the Houses of Parliament in Westminster, because the walls are not made out of carved wood that's been handed down from generations to generations and so forth. So what Andrew and I propose is that in this debate we look at whether or not the way that we run our society in the United Kingdom is better or worse than the way that you run yours here in America. So what we're going to say on this side of the House is that we think the British social model of having a regulated society in terms of the economy, in terms of the provision of healthcare and services, and also in terms of culture and sport, is actually better for the people of that society. Now, we think that America and, you know, the two American flags that stand behind me are, you know, great beacons to the world. They stand for freedom, for liberty, for democracy, and we applaud that. But we think fundamentally that when you look at the way that societies run in the modern world, it's actually better to do things the way that we do with the Union Jack and with the Queen. So, what I'm going to be looking at in my speech is the issue of justice and the way that that works under the British model, and secondly, the idea of how social services can be provided to ensure some kind of equality amongst all the peoples of a state. And finally, I'll be looking at something very dear to all Americans' hearts, which is sport. Andrew will then be following up with some analysis of culture in general and why we think the US would be better if it took a slightly more English attitude to things. So let's start with the issue of justice, because it's something that fundamentally is at the heart of every society. And we say that in the United Kingdom, different emphasis is played on different things. And we think that in the United States, you've slightly skewed the balance of rights so that individuals have more freedom than we think that they should. Now, this was quite apparent to me when I came to Kirkland City Hall for the first time this evening, and we accidentally went to the library, which is upstairs. Now, the sign outside the library said, no guns allowed. You couldn't bring any firearms into the library, for good reason, which is that you don't need a gun to read a book. But in Britain, if you went to a library, most likely the sign would say, no cell phones, or shh, you know, please be quiet, other people are using the library. So we think that in a society where you give people these excessive freedoms, like the right to bear arms, which is provided under the US Constitution, that you actually actually misguide the way that society should be run. We also think that if you look at the judicial process as a whole, so say looking at how judges are far more political in this country, where, for example, the Supreme Court has to, the judges have to be nominated by political parties, looking, for example, at the Chief Justice Roberts' recent negotiation through the Senate, we think that the separation of the judiciary and the state, as happens in the United Kingdom, is a much better way to do things, because it means that you don't get political parties pushing their own ideas into the judiciary. But let's look at how this spills over into social services, because what we say on this side of the house, and I'll take you just in just a second, is that Andrew and I are examples of two fine, healthy young British men. And the reason why that is, apart from our good birth and our mother's cooking, is that we've been able to get a host of public services that have been well provided regardless of our background or social standing. Yes.
Okay, while you bring analysis that the judges, Supreme Court justices, must be nominated by parties, how does this also compare to the House of Commons, where the whole House of Lords is appointed and not just nominated, whereas in the States we also vote in our justices?
Well, obviously, we've made some mistakes in the past with the House of Lords, and that's why we're reforming it at the moment. So while we used to have, before 1997, a fully appointed hereditary house, now the UK is phasing out the hereditary peers, and we're now going to move to a mixed system where we have some appointed individuals who do sit in the second chamber, which actually has reduced power, so we don't think it's quite as important. But let's go back to the issue of healthcare, because we say in this country, in America today, there are tens of millions of people who have no medical insurance, and that means that they can't get access to lots of basic medical provisions, and that means that they get sick. In the UK, we have a National Health Service, which was established after the Second World War to provide cradle-to-the-grave coverage for every single citizen of the state. They paid their taxes, some of that money went into providing services when they got sick. Now, we don't think that it's fair that the poor and minorities in American society, who we think are disproportionately are affected by the freedom that the American government decides individuals should have to provide for their own healthcare, is a good thing. We also don't think it's a good thing for old people, because we look at the massive gap in pension inequality in the United States compared to the UK. Now, there may be lots of pensioners who are very happy in the US, going off to their second holiday homes in Arizona or Florida, but actually the gap between the working class poor who are elderly in the United States and in Britain is very wide. And this is because in the UK and in Europe as a whole, we've adopted our pensions model so that more state money goes into providing for the welfare of old people, no thank you, when they get old. Finally, we'd say, look at the education system as a benchmark of how much freedom actually equates to social advancement. Because, Andrew and I come from the good University of Oxford. It does have a good reputation worldwide. But we don't pay that much tuition to go there. Most of us will pay, in the course of a year, about $2,000 US. Now, compare that to any Ivy League school or good community college in the United States, that's likely to be 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 times more for a US student. And we say that actually the fact that we can do our degree in 3 years and still get lots of education, no thank you, and it takes American students 4, could be a representation of Americans being less clever, but we don't think that's true, because we haven't come here to start a big fight about who's more intelligent. You can decide in this debate who you think has got better arguments. But what it fundamentally suggests is that the state shouldn't be giving people this freedom to, loaf around for an extra year. You should get the work done and then move on and be productive. So let's look at the final thing, a way you could be productive, which is maybe to play competitive sports. And Andrew and I, being keen sports stars, are very interested when we come to America and watch ESPN. But what we see is that money and the freedom of individuals to put loads of cash into sports degrades the concept of, people playing a particular game. And we think the fact that American sports characterized by franchises which move around, where people don't have actual, any loyalty to the grassroots of a team. So where North Dakota doesn't have a major league baseball team, they all go and support the Minnesota Cubs because they're down the road. We think that's a bad thing. The Scottish people will never support the English people in a game of soccer, because we're different countries, we're different states, and we're very proud of that in that context. But finally, we'd look at sport as an example of Americans' great freedom to eat, something which Americans do with great vigour, and we think that that's not necessarily good when it's tied into competitive sports. Going to watch a baseball game is more about eating the fries, or going to a basketball game and having 3 gallons tons of cola. We don't think that's a good thing. In Britain, we go and watch a game of cricket. It takes 5 days. We have a cucumber sandwich and a cup of tea and then go home. And we think that's a better thing. So what I've told you essentially is that British society is better because the justice system is better, because the social service provision is better, and because our attitude to sports is better, and that's all because we actually have less freedom. So as much as we love the flag, we also love Britain, and that's why we beg you propose the motion.
I thank the Prime Minister for his eloquent remarks and now call on Leader of Opposition Courtney Tama to present her speech, lasting no more than 8 minutes. A long time ago, our founding fathers made a distinct choice to not be like Britain, to separate, to revolt, to rise up and say, we're tired of you British people. We're ready to make our own way. We're ready to be our own people. And with that, they made the Declaration of Independence. And in that sacred document, they recorded 3 unalienable rights: the right to life, the right to liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now these 2 rights shall frame the side of the opposition team and shall show you why the American people are distinctly different from the UK, from the British people, and will also show why it is the opposite, why the resolution is oppositely true, why the UK is increasingly becoming more like the United States.
You're here.
And so with that, let's get into a few points of rebuttal. So first, what we hear out of the government team is that it's empirically true that they have beautiful old buildings, and that that's one of the aesthetic reasons why the United Kingdom is better than the U.S. However, we here in the U.S., we also have beautiful buildings, such as St. Paul's Cathedral up on the Episcopal Church up on Capitol Hill. And also, we have many more beautiful buildings. Today, they were at the Redmond City Hall. And they remarked at how beautiful that building was, because Americans have valued the new, the improved, and the innovated ideas of our culture. And we have brought forth a new idea of modern art and modern architecture, and have made that what will one day be the old and the beautiful. So their argument that the old colonial style of architecture does not hold, because that one day will be just as valuable as the new modern architecture we have today. Now, what we hear out of them, and their next point, is that of justice. And they bring an example of the Supreme Court justices and how they are nominated, and that there's an skewed rights to the excess. And I asked the question about the House of Lords, and he's responded saying that the House of Lords are being phased out to an elected position. Is that not representative, or just evidence of the American way, that we must have representation in democracy, that officials must be elected to represent the people, not this time? This is only an evidence of the reverse effects, not that the U.S. should become more like the U.K., but that the U.K. is increasingly becoming more like the U.S. Now on to their second point, that of social services. And they talked about how health care has been bad, and that it's the U.S. system has damaged the American people, and that millions of people go every year without treatment. While this is true, American people also are not always that informed about their rights. The government also has provided numerous social services programs for children to have health care, and also for adults to have health care in the States that are free and offered freely to all of them. Also, if anyone goes to an emergency room, they cannot be denied health care. They cannot be denied service. And this is one of the important things in our society. Furthermore, I would go to say that our system of insurance and health care has provided for numerous jobs and numerous amounts of money through the insurance system, tax money, as well as money recycled into our economy through simple purchases, that has helped our economy grow and has helped thousands of people have jobs all across our nation. This is an important benefit. Instead of having a state-run health institution, we have an expanding health institution that it provides for everyone. More so, we also have the best technology and the best medicine in the developing world, or in the world. And we also have We also provide much of the medicine technology for the rest of the world, and that is a huge benefit that comes from our own system. Their next point, that of sports. And they talked about the franchise and how North Dakota doesn't have a team, and so they have to go support South Dakota. Well, North Dakota is also a very poor state. Or not necessarily just poor, but just doesn't have a lot of people. And also doesn't have a huge economy to support a professional sports team. And whereas our country has, I'll get to you in a moment, where our country has said that they value states being able to support their own people, their own representative people from their state or from their communities, and supporting that in their own way has only expanded the spirit of competition and has only made the sports industry better. I'll take your question.
Madam, don't you think that the people of Fargo and Bismarck deserve to have a sports team? Not just because the market doesn't provide for them, but that they should be allowed to, like the people of Barnsley and Wigan have a team.
Absolutely. They should be allowed to have a team. Nobody's preventing them except for themselves. They need to vote to have a team. They also need to put money towards having a team. Just like in a national team, people must put money and time and effort to having a national team. We here on stateside have decided to have state teams. And when the North Dakota people decide that they want to have a state team, they are certainly entitled to have that. Now on to their next point about culture and eating and how eating is a gross aspect to sports entertainment. I would say that this is only a community builder. As we've known through eating throughout the ages, that it has been an important aspect to communities. All year round, all across the country, people line up in parking lots for football games on the back of their trucks, a beer in hand, or a Pepsi in the other, and they enjoy themselves. And it's a community unifying event where people come together, enjoy food together, and enjoy a great sport together. It is a unifying thing. It's not just, no one can say that you can only watch sports without food. No, they come hand in hand. And when people get together to watch sports, they also get together to enjoy good food. And they can't say that it must be separated. I can take your question.
Madam, do you not think that it also builds communities when lots of Americans have heart disease and heart attacks and meet each other in the ER after they've had too many hot dogs?
Well, I mean, perhaps it does build community if they meet each other in the ER after they've had too many hot dogs. But at the same time, not everyone's eating unhealthy food. They can also eat healthy food. I remember numerous family events when I was young. We all sat together and had a fruit salad. That's not the same as a Big Mac. And so you can't just say that everyone's doing that. But on to our case about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I like to present with you three arguments. First, that of life, and that is the protector of life, the United States' unique perspective on the world, and how they've been an active force in the world but to protect other peoples against the tyranny of fallen man, and how they are also the number one nonprofit country in the world, and they provide more money per capita than any other nation in the world to developing countries and in foreign aid. And now this is to include, this is two times, is just for private charities, private money donated by private people, private funds. If you compare it also with the state money that it's allocated, it's three times more than any other nation in the world per capita. Take this even farther and go into the liberty and the American dream that people can become anything that they want to be, and that the spirit of innovation has arisen out of the state of capitalism, where people must now become the best in order to reach their dreams and make their dreams realized. The entrepreneurial spirit has taken place in the American society, and that is something uniquely American and something that separates us. My partner will also go on to talk about paternalism and the freedom of independence. And with that, we are very proud to oppose.
I would like to thank the Leader of Opposition for her eloquent remarks, and now call on Member of Government Andrew Goodman to present his speech.
Speaking of the chair of the House, Alex has told me that I have to defend North Dakota in my speech, so I'll be referring to Alex Just, former intern for the congressional staff of Kent Conrad, and multiple points in my defence of North Dakota and its sports teams. I'd like to do three things for you today. First of all, I'd like to talk to you about the conception we got from Northwest about life, liberty and happiness, and why that's all very good, and that was a kind of good idea to get rid of the British at the time. We in Oxford were trying to do the same by kind of having independence from various university authorities at the time. But actually why the US just hasn't lived up and fulfilled those promises, particularly in the international arena. Second, I'm going to look at the kind of material that we got out of the first speaker from Northwest, because that was really important, and there was like some very good argumentation there, but again, we said that if you look at the fine print, if you look at exactly what's happening in the US, again, noble ideals that are not living up to. And thirdly, finally, I'm going to talk to you about culture, because I found some interesting facts about American culture earlier in the day, and I think that they're so interesting that they should be shared with everyone, because I think they're quite enlightening about the differences between the UK and US culture. I think they're kind of quite important in this way. This microphone's very novel. So, first of all, this kind of idea about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, we say if you look to life, the US has a big problem here. Yes, it might want to support kind of the protection of life, but we say at the moment the US doesn't do that, for instance, in terms of its enforcement of the death penalty. How can the US say that it stands up for the protection of life when it doesn't even protect the lives of its own citizens? We say that the UK and the EU has a moratorium on the death penalty. It condemns states that use the death penalty. And we say that if you're looking at the kind of protection of life, we say you should stand firmly with side Oxford today. But also in terms of in the international community, in terms of, for instance, provision of foreign aid, we say there's a big problem with what the US does. So the US is very good, for instance, at creating client states. It's very good at providing lots of foreign aid to, say, Micronesia. Now, that causes a bit of a problem, because it doesn't mean that the Micronesian people or the people it's giving aid to are necessarily independent. It doesn't enhance their quality of life. And we say often the kind of tied foreign aid that the US gives impairs their quality of life. We think that's a bad thing, and again, we think it's an argument that falls with Oxford today. But in terms of liberty, and this is kind of the second big idea that we got out of Northwest today, we say there's also a problem here, because this idea of the spirit of innovation doesn't work when you don't start with a level playing field. And Alex told you the big problems in the US at the moment, where you don't start with a level playing field. And we say that, yes, the US is a cultural melting pot, but it's not a cultural melting pot in the way in the UK, where you can genuinely start off from an equal footing, ladies and gentlemen. And you see that, for instance, by the fact that you have to enforce policies. No, thank you, sir. You have to enforce policies of affirmative action, ladies and gentlemen. But those policies still aren't working. So we say, in terms of life and liberty, ladies and gentlemen, the US doesn't live up to the big, brave, bold ideas that we got from Northwest. But what's the further analysis here? And what's the kind of the dialogue that's gone on between proposition and opposition in this debate? Because I want to kind of give you our responses to what we heard from the first speaker from Northwest. Because the first thing we were told was that, well, in the US we also have great buildings, and there's a great number of them. Well, we'd say a couple of things, this, ladies and gentlemen. We'd say that if you take the great US buildings, say, for instance, St. Paul's Cathedral, we'd say, ladies and gentlemen, they were stolen from the British. We say the British are the root, the British provide the inspiration. And that happens all around the world. We're not saying the US is unique. Say, Sydney Harbour Bridge, one of the great kind of architectural beauties of Australia, ladies and gentlemen. It's actually a bridge in Tyneside, in Newcastle, where I was brought up, that's not particularly attractive. They just made it twice as big, ladies and gentlemen, and put it across quite a beautiful harbour in Sydney. So we say the Americans, the Australians, aren't really coming up with anything new. They may have tried to get away from us, ladies and gentlemen, but they haven't actually come up with any new architectural innovation since they left the British Empire, ladies and gentlemen. We say we think that's a big problem. We say that's why, ladies and gentlemen, we want UK architectural inspiration. But secondly, we were told about kind of social services. That a lot of American people actually do receive healthcare, that actually if you go to an emergency room, you will receive treatment. We say there's a couple of problems here. We're not going to claim that it's not that Americans don't want healthcare. We're not going to say that Americans fundamentally act irrational. But there's a couple of problems. And the problems are with what Alex talked to you about. They're with freedom, ladies and gentlemen. Because the problem in the US is you get far too much freedom in terms of the decision that you make. So why isn't there, for instance, a proper working social security system or a proper working state healthcare system? It's because there is far too much freedom. So for instance, big pharmaceuticals have far too much freedom in terms of how they can use their money to influence political decision making. That's one of the reasons, ladies and gentlemen, that you don't have fair prices for prescription drugs available to everyone in the way that you do in the UK. That's why we regulate the influence, ladies and gentlemen, of big companies. We say that's a problem. But also in terms of the fact that Democrats and Republicans have fundamentally different conceptions of what they want to get out of healthcare. And we say in the UK, where you have a parliamentary government, where even if there's a slim majority, you can actually make decisions, we say yes, some people feel disenfranchised, some people feel unhappy with the decisions. But at the end of the day, we have a comprehensive working healthcare system. And we say, that's the really important thing. Go on, sir.
First off, isn't the American healthcare system the best in the world? much better than your current healthcare system? And isn't it also true that your healthcare system, they're looking to reform it and actually make it more independent and more capitalistic as the American healthcare system?
Well, we'd say two things to that. Yes, we're willing to concede. You do have the best healthcare system in the world. Sadly, most Americans never see the best healthcare system in the world. We think that's a big problem. And we say, as gentlemen, that in the UK, yes, we do have significant waiting lines, but less people die and more people have the opportunity to access to healthcare. And that's what Western developed nations should be aiming for. But in terms of the UK model, yes, we do say that the UK has tried to reform its healthcare system. It has done things like giving greater freedom. The local healthcare trust where I come from has just tried to give itself greater freedom. It's gone into massive debt because we've given it the freedom to borrow, ladies and gentlemen. That's exactly the kind of thing we see in the US with individual healthcare trusts. We think that's a big problem. But I'm not going to the third kind of quite interesting argument that we got out of proposition, I'm not going to try and respond to. And I probably actually agree that North Dakota doesn't have a state football team or baseball team or whatever because it's poor and it has a small population. If any of you would like further information about North Dakota, Alex will be happy to answer that. But I'd like to say that I personally am prepared to concede that to the opposition. Whether or not that's going to affect Alex's chance in US politics, I'm not sure. Hello, Senator Conrad. But finally, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to deal with this argument from proposition about eating as a community builder. Because we think Alex's point of information dealt with this quite effectively. But we say, if something is a community builder, that doesn't matter if there are huge healthcare problems. But furthermore, in the UK, we do manage to align, ladies and gentlemen. The England football fans manage to align very nicely around hating the Scottish, ladies and gentlemen. We manage to align very nicely about cricket, even when we're losing to the Australians. So we say, it's not something about eating, ladies and gentlemen, that's just a side effect of American culture. It's something about playing sport. It's something about losing to the best teams in the world, ladies and gentlemen. And we say, America doesn't, no thank you, sir, because it seems to, unfortunately, win quite a lot of the sports it plays. It doesn't have that kind of bonding experience of losing 5-0 to Germany, ladies and gentlemen, or losing your Ashes test 5-0 to Australia. We think that's where true community spirits forged in the face of adversity. So we say, again, obviously the UK is the nation we want to follow that. But culture, and this is the last thing we want to deal with, because we think culture is really important in this debate. And we think it's not just about regulation and big government, it's also about culture and the culture that you have. So first off, gun culture. We're not going to claim in this debate that all the problems in the US could be solved by regulation of guns. What's the problem? Well, the US, whilst it has guns, isn't the only nation to do so. Nor does it have more guns per capita than Switzerland or Canada, ladies and gentlemen. But yet it does have far more gun crime. And we say that's a fundamental endemic culture issue. It's something that is in the US, but it's not in the UK. It's why you could never regulate handguns in the US, but you can regulate it very effectively in the UK to stop gun deaths. And we think that's a big cultural problem that the US has to face up to. Secondly, in terms of celebrity in the media, because we want to say that the UK is actually the birthplace of a significant number of great films that are overlooked. It's specifically the birthplace of a great number of independent films that are squeezed out by corporatist culture in the US. So we say Ealing Studios, Alec Guinness. In the US, you could never get a single actor playing that many roles in that many films produced over such a period of time. We also say the Harry Potter films, ladies and gentlemen. Alex is famous across the world because of his youthful looks and the fact that he looks like Daniel Radcliffe, the actor that plays Harry Potter. In fact, in Macy's today, shop assistants were going, do you think it's him? Do you think if we say Harry Potter, he might react? And to be honest, I'm quite enjoying piggybacking on Alex's international fame. It's kind of a good gig that I've got going. So we think that without the UK, you wouldn't have things like Harry Potter. Alex wouldn't be the kind of pop hero that he is. But also, we say that that's the general principle about kind of producing independent films. But we also say in terms of the high-low culture distinction, we say on Oxford we stand for high culture, whilst the US inevitably stands for low culture. We can kind of illustrate this by looking at some speeches. So there's something called the Fleisch-Kincaid scale, which measures the reading age of a particular speech. Now, if you look at the speeches of US actors, Tom Hanks, reading age 13, is the average reading age of his speech. Halle Berry, 8, is the average reading age of her speeches. George Bush, your president, 6, is the average reading age of his speeches. We say we're gonna go ahead on Oxford and stand for kind of high culture. And if they are two peoples divided by the same language, we say, at least in the UK, we know how to speak that language, ladies and gentlemen, even if you guys are still speaking it now. But thirdly and finally, we'd like to look at health culture, ladies and gentlemen, because we say it's astonishing that the UK makes 200 times as many bicycle journeys every year as the US does, given that your population's almost kind of 5 times as big as ours is. But that's not really astonishing when you look at the culture in the US. Your cities are constructed for bad culture, ladies and gentlemen, for a bad health culture. It's the fact that it's very, very hard to walk anywhere. It's very, very hard to cycle anywhere. The SUV rules in America. It's the fact you have wasteful land usage. It's the fact that lots of Americans are members of a gym, but rather than walking to the gym, they drive to the gym, ladies and gentlemen, to then run on the treadmill distance between the house and the gym. And we think that's a big kind of cultural issue. So what do we hope we brought you today? Well, aside from entertainment and a few laughs at Alex's expense, we hope that we've brought you a kind of debunking of the myths of life and liberty, and we've shown you that actually America doesn't live up to them. We hope we've kind of talked to you about social services and about architecture in the UK and show you that actually it sides with Oxford. We hope finally we've talked to you about regulation and culturalism, because we think the true home of culture and where America should be coming back to is Britain, the United Kingdom, England, ladies and gentlemen. And that's why we urge you to side with Oxford today.
I thank the Member of Government for his eloquent remarks. Now call on the Member of Opposition, Jed Nelson, to present his speech.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. It's been an interesting debate. I've learned quite a bit about England so far. And yet, I still am glad that I'm from the United States and not from the UK. No offense to my good friends here. In this debate, I'm going to be mainly focusing on my partner and I's points, namely paternalism versus a government that is of the people, by the people, and for the people. The American dream and why it is the American dream and not the British dream. And also life, how we, the United States of America, promote life around the world and in our own country. But first, to deal with a few of their points. They talk about how we don't actually help life. They point to the death penalty. In many situations, I cannot defend this. However, I can point to the fact that many states have regulated or have banned the death penalty throughout the United States. The United States is making progress on this front. Second, they talk about provision of foreign aid. Now, here I think they end up making a slight mistake. They end up assuming that everything is tied to the government. However, the majority of the foreign aid that we give comes from personal private donors, through organizations that help out, through nonprofit organizations such as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And what do these organizations accomplish? Well, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is seeking to eradicate diseases that are treatable around the world in third world nations. And it is accomplishing its goals, and it is seeing a decrease within these things. It is furthering life abroad. Next, they talk about innovation, and that's they say we don't have an even playing field. However, in their system, you can't really become the king unless you're born into it. You really can't become a lord unless you're born into it. In our system, you can become the president of the United States regardless of where you were born, regardless of your background, regardless of your history. We do have an ability to rise up and to make it to the highest points within our culture, and I think that this shows we do have an even and level playing field. In addition to that, they point to the educational system. Now, I have 2 points on this. The first, when I visited their esteemed university earlier this year, I was surprised to hear in their debating chamber the resolution that the UK should follow, that particularly Oxford and Cambridge, should follow the United States model of Harvard and Yale in making their systems based upon a trust rather than upon government funding in order to have more freedom of education. And they continually pointed to the fact that American education is amongst the best in the world. Our second point underneath this is that we do have the ability with state-funded education that we do end up paying less money in order to get an education. I go to a private university by my own choice, I end up paying more for that. But if I went to a public university, I could pay $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 and be able to make it through school just like they pay. I'll take your point.
So I acknowledge that I kind of shot myself in the foot by being in that debate before. For this one. But we say it doesn't matter. Like, yes, you guys do have more money, but the population that have access to it, it doesn't matter. Like, there are some African nations who have fantastic healthcare for the leader and their cadre, but they don't have fantastic healthcare for the rest of their population. That's the problem.
I would actually argue that, well, not necessarily dealing with healthcare, I'll deal with that in a bit, but in the education system, we do have the ability for everyone to make it there on merit. We can point to Harvard and to Yale and say, you know what, the poor do make it there. There's something called scholarships. People end up giving money to these trusts in order to help the poor and the less fortunate make it. From our own school, a person by the name of, I can't remember his last name, Jordan Goddard was able to make it to Harvard, though he came from a single family, though he had to work his way into Northwest and be able to take out a ton of loans to do it, yet he applied to Harvard Law School, and he made it into Harvard Law School, and with the help of that institution, he is passing and making it through Harvard Law School, in spite of the fact that it is the top-ranked law school within our nation. Next, they talk about how we have too much freedom. I beg to differ. I will deal with this more when I talk about the American dream. But the fact is, our freedom creates the high quality of services that we do have. It is that freedom, it is that competition which has created that amazing healthcare system. We develop most of the drugs that end up affecting the world. Why? Because there is competition. There is reward for developing those drugs. So companies have incentive to spend billions and billions of dollars to do the research to accomplish getting those drugs. Same thing is true of education. Because we have more money, because we have that competition, we have a better educational system, and that is why people look to our universities as the best in the world. Next, we can look to culture, and they talk about the culture of violence in America, and this is unfortunate. I don't really have much of an answer to this. I would say that in some ways we should be more like the UK. However, I would argue that if we should simply ban guns and violate our own constitution, that would be very non-American of us, and I don't think that it is something that much of the culture and the people of America would like. Something that we would want to follow. Why? Because we believe in the right to revolution. We believe in the right that we had the right to overthrow the UK when they were trying to oppress us and put their own values and culture upon us. Next, they talk about films. And yes, the UK has brought some great films, but we have also returned many great films back to them, even about their own people. I watched the James Bond film recently, definitely enjoyed it. It was produced in Hollywood. Next, they talk about high culture versus low culture and how we generally have a lower speaking standard. I apologize for George Bush and his sixth grade reading level, or speaking level. However, I would argue that since we are standing here in debate, competing with each other and competing all over the world, that there is the ability within both nations to have good speakers, to present our arguments, and to debate each other on the same level. And so I don't think that just because we have fewer really great speakers, necessarily that means we should all become like Britain. Not this time. Next, to get into our positive matter. First off, paternalism versus a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Now, they come from a system of government in which the government basically provides for people. It's kind of like a parent taking care of a child. In America, we see it more as a cooperation, where we as people cooperate with our government in order to accomplish the various goals, which are good for both us, the people, and for the government, and for the broader elected people. We can see this in the difference between the King and the House of Lords, which are kind of appointed and in charge and supposed to take care of things. In fact, you can look back to Hobbes' Leviathan, and basically he says that the king's job is to be the father for the nation. And you can look to our completely elected governing body, including, we don't elect the Supreme Court, we elect the people who appoint the Supreme Court. And we can say, you know what, those people represent us, they are us. And if they don't represent our interests, well, we can get rid of them. They can't get rid of the people in the House of Lords. In fact, their big argument in response to this was, well, we're becoming more like America and we're creating a representational government. Well, that's the reason why they should become more like America, not why we should become more like Britain. I'll take your point.
But sir, your elected systems fail to solve all the problems of healthcare, of education that we've outlined. Ours has. It's not as democratic as yours, but we think that restricting freedom in this way results in positive outcomes, results in a better society.
Interesting point. Let's deal with healthcare first. You're talking about how you have a better system of healthcare, yet when I stood up and asked my question, I asked who has the better system of healthcare. The United States consistently ranks number one in the quality of healthcare provided. You claim that not everyone has access to healthcare. I can say I come from a family that cannot afford health insurance. I come from a very poor town in rural Idaho, and yet I have seen the benefits of our healthcare system. Why? Because we have something called charities. These charities and co-ops are able to work together to provide healthcare to the poor. Not only that, we also have public clinics funded by the government which are able to provide the basic needs such as the shots that we need in order to avoid later on illnesses. So we do actually make sure that everyone has access to it. Now, do we have the same access that you guys do? No. But most people are able to get the access they need and the healthcare they need within our nation. Is there some improvement to be made here? Yes. Is that improvement necessarily creating a state-funded healthcare system? No, because if we do so, we risk losing the high quality that we have and falling into the low quality that Europe has, including the UK. That is why the UK is actually moving forward to commercialize and capitalize their own healthcare system. Next, we can look to the American dream and the pursuit of happiness. Now, this kind of goes in direct contradiction to their whole point that we don't have a level playing field. People like Ford, people like Bill Gates, are able to rise from practically nothing, pursue their dreams, and accomplish those. People who might go to school in the inner cities can say, yeah, I want to be an astronaut, and to see that dream be fulfilled. They can start their own business. They can rise. We see this happening in America, and that is why it is the American dream. People come together to do these things. And last, I talked about life in the beginning when I was refuting him. And three guys of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and the way that is accomplished in America. We believe that adopting the UK system would compromise these things and push us into something that we are not. And that is why we stand firmly opposed.
I thank the member of opposition for his remarks. Now call on the leader of opposition, Courtney Toma, to present the opposition rebuttal lasting no more than 4 minutes with no new arguments, but new examples are welcomed. Adjust this for short people. At the beginning of this debate, my partner and I presented
presented our side through the eyes of the founding presidents and the founding leaders of our nation, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And with that, we'd like to bring you 3 points of how you should evaluate this round. First, that of representation. Second, of rights. And third, of culture. And through these 3 points, I'll bring you some analysis of how the arguments weighed out in this round. So first, in the argument of representation. And what we hear from the opposition side is that we have a fair government where we elect our Supreme Court justices, where we elect all of our officials. And it's this very founding principle of representation is the very reason why we left England in the first place. No taxation without representation was the very words of our founding fathers, the very reason why we left. And that representation carries through many other ways. As my partner pointed out in his analysis about paternalism, and that we want a government that does not just preside over us, but we want a government that works with us. We don't want a father, we want a friend. And that is the very essence of our electoral system, and how candidates, they don't come out to and run their campaign and saying, I'll take care of you, I'll be your father, I'll provide for you, and if you need a new car, I'll help you out. No, they come out as your friend. I want to work with you. I want to listen to your ideas. I want to be your help, your friend, your right hand when it comes to the important issues. It's this idea of representation that Americans love and that Americans value. And when we ask the question about the House of Lords and their House of Commons, and how these are appointed, they say, well, they're moving towards a representative system, and they're trying to weed out all of those appointed officials. We don't have appointed officials except for the president's cabinet and our society. Everyone else is voted in. And this is a very important aspect in that they are becoming more like the United States, as we set out in the beginning of this debate, that the U.S. should not become more like the U.K., but that the U.K. is increasingly becoming more like the United States. And our second point, that of rights. And the main contention on this is that of health care. And they say all should have access to health care. And we do not disagree with this at all. But we also point out that in our system, that everyone does have access to health care. Everyone can go to an emergency room. Everyone has the right to apply for state health services. Children are all guaranteed state health care if their parents cannot provide for it. And more than that, we also show how our health care system has provided innovation in the medicine technology industry, and has also, as I pointed out in my first speech, has also provided thousands of jobs and millions of dollars in revenue that has been recycled into our society and recycled into the Medicare into the medicine business and the pharmaceuticals, and has also provided many other numerous steps in providing better health care for the rest of the world, and that we have more technology, more information, more reasons and better uses of our medicine that we can share with developing nations, such as my partner pointed up in the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And our third point is that of culture. And what you heard from the opposition team is that culture is more than just the nature of the sport. It's a community event. That what would be the sport be if it wasn't a bunch of people together, cheering together, eating together, unifying together as a community. Community. C-O-M-M plus unity. Unity is the key to community. And that's the key in sports, is that it's not just one person cheering a team, it's that we cheer them together. And the aspect of food, bringing people together, being one of the linking reasons why people come together, is key in this issue. It's key in our culture. They bring up the example of Harry Potter, and my partner brings out the example of James Bond. And so we also see how the movie industry has been an increasingly influential part on their culture as well. So should the United States become more like the UK? I disagree. I would say that the UK is increasingly becoming like the United States, and that's pretty much good for them.
I now thank the Leader of Opposition for her rebuttal, and now call on the Prime Minister to present the government rebuttal lasting no more than 5 minutes, with no new arguments, but new arguments are welcomed.
examples are welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Speaker, ladies and gentlemen. In summarizing the debate this evening, I want to take you through three very important areas of clash between the two sides. Firstly, whether or not the issue of social justice has fallen on the side of the British. Secondly, on whether or not culturally the UK is actually stronger and has a healthier culture overall. And thirdly, whether or not on the international stage the US is actually as good as the opposition have asserted. So let's start at the beginning of the debate when we were talking about our system of justice and whether or not the principles on which the UK was founded and on which the US then based its constitution were good or bad in terms of the balance that you have placed on the judiciary and the state. And we say that what we proved on this side is that it's not a good idea for your judges, to the people who make decisions about criminal justice, to be part of the electoral process. We say that the House of Lords is actually part of the democratic electoral aspect of the United Kingdom, that it is being reformed, and that we think that at least we're taking steps in the right direction. But we don't like the fact that Judge Judy is able to hand down sentences to people on the basis of her being selected purely on populist mandate. And we don't think that that's healthy at all. We also say that in terms of looking at provision of services, look at the healthcare system in the United States. It may be one of the best in the world technologically, but the fact is that that doesn't trickle down to ordinary American citizens in ghettos in Chicago, in rural communities in South Dakota, in places where there are large immigrant communities in California. So what we say is that it's not good enough for the opposition to say, well, charities step in and provide the gap where the state isn't giving people what they need. The state's there to help individuals. Hobbes admitted in Leviathan, as have numerous social writers like Rousseau, you quite like French people too, they gave him the Eiffel Tower and stuff. You've got to look at all these philosophical constructs and say that fundamentally you should have a state that provides some things for individuals. And this led on to the final point of analysis on social justice, which was about the American dream. And we say no, you've got to look at the American reality. Because for every individual who they say can be an astronaut when they grow up, there are at least 1,000 people who work minimum wage jobs in industries where they're not given any insurance, which means when they get ill, their children don't get any money, neither do they, and things are really not very good for them. We also don't think it's true that the President of the United States can be anyone. Let's look at the track record of American presidents. They've all been white and they've all been male. And in the last 10 years, they've all been rich or have had rich families. Two have come from the same family. You've practically got a monarchy in this country. So actually, what we say is there is no equality of opportunity in the democratic process. The British Prime Minister can genuinely have a sway in the electoral process in a way that we don't see happening with the Queen. And we also think that if you look at, the idea of Harvard Law School being this great equal opportunities thing, that for every one black student who's in Harvard Law School, the statistics would say that 1 in 10 African Americans will be in prison in the United States, not in education at all, that they won't have any social opportunity because of the fact that the American society in which the opposition have flouted as being so great is so inequitous and just doesn't really maintain anything. And finally, they have this idea that there's lots of great speakers in the US. Well, we'd say the World University Debating Championships final happened just yesterday. There were no Americans speaking in the final. There were 4 people from Britain and 4 people from Australia. So it kind of says, sucks to be you. Now, finally, let's look at the idea of culture. And what we say on this side of the house is that we are good losers in, the general sphere of culture. That when we lose the debate tonight, Andy and I will cross the floor, shake hands, and move on, go up to Microsoft tomorrow and have another debate. We won't gain a strop and get angry as Americans tend to. We also think that if you look at ways in which small communities aren't represented, we do think it's wrong, and I'll maintain that Fargo have a right to have a Major League Baseball team till I die, because I think that it's important. I think that money has corrupted American sport to a point where you can't simply argue that, the things that bring people together in American sports are community builders. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no food in football. Almost, there's foo, but there isn't that crucial D. And we don't say that it's right that Americans should eat themselves to death, as they do on numerous occasions. And finally, if we look at the idea of the international system as a whole, and what we see the US doing, well, we were told by the opposition that the US is the protector of life. We don't think interventions that they've taken in the last 3 or 4 years have actually maintained that. We think that if you look at the instability in Iraq, in Afghanistan, the way that they've propped up corrupt regimes in Southeast Asia, in Africa, the way that they completely jumped away from Somalia and allowed an Islamist government to get back in power and then sent troops in to deal with it not very well and then did something else, isn't necessarily indicative of a regime that helps. Britain helps people by sending in good peacekeeping troops, and we think that's a good thing. We also say that if you look at aid and the fact that in the US it's far more tied, the British actually make sure that they do things properly. They don't just set up these foundations which rely on rich people being very, very nice. We're in Europe and in the UK, a far greater percentage of GDP capita goes on helping the victims of things like tsunamis. And we think that that means that fundamentally it would be better if the US were more like the UK in that respect too. But we also would finally say that it just doesn't make sense culturally to argue that, you know, America is better off. Harry Potter is a fantastic creation. We think that George W. Bush is an incredibly lowbrow creation. And we don't think at all that one of the final points that was brought up by the opposition was that in America it's fine because the people who represent you, they want to be your friend. That's just not true. The people in America, in terms of politics, who will be your friend are the individuals who are lobbyists. That's been quite conclusively proven. Unless you're on K Street with lots and lots of money, you cannot get access to the political process. Fundamentally, we say the American social justice system is corrupt, your culture is corrupt, your international role on the stage is corrupt. We're very, very glad to be here. That's why we strongly urge you to propose the motion.
Well, that concludes the debate, so I'm going to ask the debaters to cross the aisle and shake hands and invite anyone in the audience to comment. You get less than a minute to make a pro or con comment. I'd like to invite you to share what you think about all this or about the debate, and I'm going to give you a chance to do that right now. Starting with Shayna. Shayna, comments. Right, just do it right there.
All right, I'll keep my comments short and brief. I really enjoy this debate. I think there are many positive aspects to the United Kingdom, many positive aspects to the United States. Like with the example we were talking about with building structures, England has these gorgeous cathedrals, buildings that we just can't deny the beauty of. But if you look at a lot of the modern buildings and modern architecture, it's coming out of the United States. So I think there are many positive benefits to both countries. And honestly, both countries would be the best staying themselves.
I think you're going to need to come up here. It won't be on that.
Thank you so much. I thought it was really impressive the way that the debaters could ask questions, and it seemed that you all could answer each other's questions without being derailed in the arguments that you were presenting. That was just a fabulous example of quick thinking.
Thank you.
Well, I know we have a small audience, but let's go ahead and vote by applause. And you watching by television, you'll have to decide on your own who you think did the better job. But let's, if you think this did the better job, applaud, please. And how about this side? Well, it looks like it tips then to Oxford. So now I'll ask the debaters to cross the aisle, shake hands, and we'll end our debate and be watching for the next one that will be announced on your TV screen. So thanks, everyone, and good night.
Thank you.